In March, we're airing programs that were rated the best last year, and today's program is one of them.
And intentional means that you've got a plan, you've got a strategy, and I found that for most people don't always have a strategy for their marriage. They've got a strategy for everything else. They're intentional about looking after their car or their retirement or their kids' education or even their job. They're very intentional about putting time and effort and learning things, reading books about management and leadership.
That was Dr. Steve Bace, our guest on the program last time, talking about the importance of having a strategy for your marriage. This is Focus on the Family with Graham Schnell, and on today's program, we're continuing our discussion with Dr. Steve on ways to strengthen our marriages.
Well, we had a great conversation with Dr. Steve Bace last time, and talking about how to make our marriages stronger and the reality of intentionality being so important. And Dr. Steve has spoken about a number of steps that we can take, intentional steps towards a stronger marriage. We spoke a little bit about how we respond to and pay attention to bids for connection so that we can really connect as a couple. And Dr. Steve, it's really great to have you back with us again. Dr. Steve is a counselor. He has his PhD in counseling, and he runs a full-time counseling practice where he's working with couples and families on a daily basis. Steve, it's great to have you with us again.
Yeah, good to be back again.
Well, Dr. Steve, we, as I said, talked about bids for connection. We spoke a little bit about how we connect emotionally. But I want to ask you about this step, which is finding shared meaning. It just intrigues me, and it sounds so critical to a healthy marriage. How do we find shared meaning, and what does that look like?
Well, shared meaning for me, I think it's a very important part of the thing. And they often talk about shared meaning is in building a strong love map. And they say couples who are the most fulfilled and happy in their marriages or relationships have got strong love maps. And love maps are built up by the little things that you do every day. Build up memories, things that you do together. So, for instance, you know, so you know quite a lot about Alison's family background. She knows a lot about your family background. And so there's shared meaning there because you've got memories that she shared with you about her childhood. And then you've also got shared meaning with the things that you two have created together when you were dating and then your first years of marriage and now with the children. So as you go on, you're building those memories. Yeah. I had a lady come and see me a couple of years ago, and she said that when I spoke to her about these things, she said, you know, we've got a lot of pictures up on our wall, but not one of them is a happy memory.
Sure.
Gives you a happy memory. And that's so sad to see. So, those, you know, the shared meaning and the love maps are those things that you build. Now, another aspect of that is that say you go to a braai, and at that braai you meet an old school mate who Alison has never met, but you haven't seen this guy for a long time. And he starts talking about things that you guys, the two of you, did at school. Now, some of those things, you've never really told Alison about them because you kind of forgot how naughty you were at school, and you don't really want to tell her how, you know, naughty you were. And now this guy's sort of, you should have seen Graham at school, and now this is what happens. You laughing and she's laughing. And when you see her laughing, it creates connection. And when she sees how happy this makes you, it also builds up connection. And that's that shared meaning, because you are both drawn to that memory that's making you laugh and her laugh. And it builds up another aspect of understanding who you are, where you've come from. And that's what happens. And then part of that is to build up the four things that I say that you need to be doing on a regular basis. And the first one, there needs to be four verbal contacts during the day. And now verbal contact is not a long discussion. It's not a conversation. It's just a checking in. So it's for connection, not information. So information is, you know, pick up the kids, buy the milk and bread. So that stuff still happens. But the connection is, hope you're having a good day, thinking of you. I send Mandy a couple of voice notes, you know, hello, babe, hope you're having a great day, miss you lots, bye, that kind of stuff. So it's very short, sharp, to the point, very quick, just, you know, I know you're going into a meeting. I'm thinking of you, praying for you after the meeting. I hope your meeting went well. I'll chat to you about it later. just those kind of connections during the day. And I find that a lot of couples are doing those kind of things, but some need to kind of just up their game. Mm-hmm. And remember that it's that when you respond to your wife's or your partner's message, that doesn't count as one.
Okay.
So when Alison says, hello, hi, love, I hope you're having a good day, and you send her, and remember what we said, you don't send your spouse or your partner thumbs up, eh? That's never a good one to send. It's got to be like a kissy face or a love or a heart, not a, or clapping hands or something. It's got to be a really good one.
This is emojis so, 101 for
yeah.
marriage.
So you need to initiate one yeah. where you're saying to her, I hope you're having a good day. Now, obviously, you can't always get to four a day, but I say to club couples, okay, look, you know, 5 out of 7 days, or say 5 days, if you're getting that right, 2 out of the days or 3 other days where you communicate, that's great. Yeah. You know, it's the problem is when it's 1 out of every 2 weeks kind of thing, that's problematic.
Yeah.
So look at it in context. So that's the verbal context. Then you've got to be six non-sexual touches a day. So non-sexual touches, holding hands, hugging the person, walking back, just, you know, rubbing their back and how you're doing, or just giving them a little peck on the cheek or a kiss or something like that. And I always say with the hugging, remember you hug and then there's an automatic release that comes into action. And I say when you're feeling that release with your partner,
the urge to let go.
So the urge to let go, when you feel that, just hold on for 2 seconds longer, because that body-to-body contact builds up a connection and bonding, which is an essential part of our relationship. So the 6 non-sexual days, and remember, you can't make up for them at the end of the day
yeah.
by just going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You've got to do them throughout the day, and it's very important to be doing that. And then date nights, of course, date nights are very important. Could just be a drive in the car, it could be a walk on the beach, it could be going for coffee, it could be just something where it's just the two of you connecting on a much deeper level.
Yeah.
And I often ask couples, and I start off with the man, because I kind of try and put him on the spot and say, what's your wife's favorite pudding? And often he doesn't know, or he'll get it wrong. But
yeah.
I must say there have been some guys who have got it right. And then I'll then ask the wife. And then I'll say, okay, well, you know, sometimes it's not always easy to get out. You might not always be able to get out and go on a date. Don't be distracted by that. Just get your partner's favorite pudding, put some candle lights on, have some soft music, and then just spend some time chatting and connecting, having pudding together, and that's just face-to-face, eye-to-eye contact, and you're just doing something together, and that creates a date night, just that connection of alone time just with each other. And then at least once a year, or if you're able to do it more often, then you can do that, but once a year you need to go away together as a couple to try and just, and even if it's just for a night, just go away, spend some time together. And remember, it's also the date night, just to go back to that. It's not only in the evening, because I know a lot of people think about, you know, date night, and they think it's got to be in the evening.
Yeah.
And I know that you and Alison do the morning thing, the breakfast. So that's also a thing, you know.
Yeah.
So look at ways, be creative.
Mm.
I mean, you know, Focus on the Family, we've got tremendous resources. My marriage book has got a whole lot of those date night ideas in there. And I mean, in actual fact, today, you don't have any excuse about not being able
yeah.
to find some idea for a date night. And it's actually very easy to do that. And those are the things that we need to do to keep that shared meaning going on.
Sure. So it is a combination of the deeper things, you know, when you started talking about, you know, the childhood memories, the memories you've built together.
That's
I guess
right.
being intentional to revisit those memories,
yes.
those happy memories particularly.
Yes.
But then adding to that just the every single day, those contacts, whether it be
That's
the
right.
verbal or the
yeah.
non-sexual touches.
That's right.
And then, yeah, being intentional about the date nights, the weekends away. That all adds to this shared meaning. I guess those memories can happen on those times away, on those
yeah,
date nights.
That's right.
But even those little contacts are during the day are building shared meaning.
That's correct.
Even if it's at a different level, I guess.
Yeah.
Steve, you know, I think trust is so vital in any relationship, and particularly with a marriage relationship, that most important relationship outside of our relationship with God. And you speak about 7 forms of trust, and obviously the importance of keeping trust
yes.
in all of those areas.
Yes.
And just take us through those forms of trust that we need to be paying attention to, and maybe
yeah.
there'll be some highlights for listeners saying, actually, that's something I need to work on.
Yes.
But yeah, just take us through the list of the seven forms of trust.
Yeah, Graham. And, you know, remember that trust is built up by the little things that you do or don't do every day. So trust is built up or broken down by little things. It's not the big, it's not always the big things. You know, often we think of trust is broken down when the person has an affair or there's something like, or there's a major indiscretion somewhere or there's financial problem, whatever. It's not necessarily always those big things, but it's just those little things that we are doing. So the first one is always, you know, for me, fidelity is that when you stand before the pastor, you say, do you take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife to her love and to her? And you say, I do. And when you say I do to her, you say I don't to everybody else. Hmm. And that includes all your old boyfriends or girlfriends and your family and your friends. There's a period of time where you need to say I don't to all of that, and they need to be moved into the next circle, because that when you're on your own and you're a bachelor or bachelorette, you kind of have that circle, and people are in that circle all the time, and you in other people's circles. But once you start to form your own circle with your partner, those people have to find you together. You have to find place for those people in your circles, because all of those circles now become the both of your circles. You can't have individual circles anymore, and so you've got to be faithful in that. And then of course the fidelity thing is that there is no one else in your life other than that person, so you can't be talking to other women or other men about anything. Obviously at work you're going to interact with people like that, but when it comes to emotional stuff, it comes to your marriage, and it comes to your kids, you shouldn't be talking to other people about that. You should be talking to your partner about that. Now obviously you could share with there's some things, but essentially it has to come to your partner. So I say this: look, if I was at work and the boss comes in and says, hey Steve, you've been really doing well, we're going to promote you to area manager, okay, and my mother phones shortly after that, I shouldn't be telling my mother that news first. Yeah. I should be telling Mandy that news first, and then everybody else. And then the second one for there, or whichever one, is physical safety. So physical safety obviously is the main one, is you're not in a physically abusive marriage.
Yeah.
If you are, then you need to get help, get out and find help.
Yeah.
But physical safety goes further than that. It's just making sure that your house is physically safe. Do both of you and your children at all feel physically safe in that environment? And then also when you're driving, make sure that you're driving and the people within the car are feeling physically safe. When they don't, it starts to erode trust. Then can I trust you with the children? Are you trustworthy? And I know, you know, people think, well, you know, that should be a given, but there's a lot of couples that can't. They don't trust their partners, and I'm not just talking about divorced parents.
Yeah.
I'm talking about couples who are together.
I don't want to leave the kids at home with the
yes,
husband, because
he's going
to play on the PlayStation.
He's on the PlayStation all the time or whatever, and he's not even looking after the kids. Doesn't interact with the kids. So that's, can I trust you with that? And remember that all of these are little things. That if I can't trust you with those things, what else can I trust you? Can't I trust you with that kind of thing? And then finances. Can I trust you with the finances? If you look at the research, they'll say that most marriage books will tell you that there's two things couples fight about, and that's finances and sex. And finances actually beat the sex thing.
Mm-hmm.
So couples talk and fight about finances. You'll be surprised how many couples don't have a budget and how to plan finances and use their finances wisely. And you shouldn't be going out and buying things without your, you know, I mean within a certain amount. So, you know, couples might say, within R500, we can just buy. So I don't check with Mandy everything she buys and stuff. But if it's big ticket items like a fridge or a television, or that's going to cost you a good whack of bucks, you shouldn't be making those decisions on your own. I think it can. If you're doing that regularly, it'll erode trust.
Yeah. You had a story with somebody who came for counseling.
Yes, who came for counseling. Yes, that's right. And they were struggling, really struggling.
Financially
hard. I mean, they were struggling to even put food on their table. Their kids' school clothes were, you know, they'd been called in by the school because their clothes were, the shoes were broken and all that. And they just never had money. And she came in early to the session the one time, and she had found a receipt in his pocket when she was cleaning his jacket out to put in the wash, and it was a receipt for R30,000, which he'd been putting money away to buy himself a mountain bike. And that obviously just killed the marriage. I mean, they eventually got divorced because he just could not see that there was any problem with that. And yeah. I think that that's a major problem. If you can't see that your family is really struggling financially and you're struggling to put food on the table, and you can be so selfish and not see that there's so much money there, and your mountain bike should be, I think that's very selfish and self-absorbed,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So the next one would be truthfulness. And that's always, you know, telling the truth, not telling stories, don't tell lies, don't exaggerate stuff. Yeah. And I'll use the story about Mandy and I in the early days of marriage, and we were playing this game, and there was a card that said, you know, it's okay to have secrets in marriage. And, you know, Mandy didn't really know my sense of humor at that stage. So she said, of course, you're not allowed to have secrets in marriage. So I said, well, I think it's okay because it's a secret. Now you're going to know, you know. And she was really devastated and upset that I would actually think like it. And it took me a while to convince her that I was actually joking. It's not true. And so there are no secrets, you know. You shouldn't have secrets. You shouldn't be, you know, your partner shouldn't be finding out 5 years, 6 years down the line that there's something that there's, you know. And I found that quite devastating for couples. You know, they five years down the line, they find out that their partner's smoking, you know, or addicted to pornography or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And it can be devastating when they find that out. And then if it's like more of those, like, you know, they find out that they been smoking dacha, and they've just kind of worked through that and got over it, then they stumble on the fact that he's also addicted to pornography. I mean, it's just a whang, whang, whang.
Yeah.
And so it's better to try and deal. And of course, you take responsibility. And I just shared the story too, that I prayed for this one guy who had a problem with dacha, and you know, he hasn't gone back to it since, and he said he doesn't even have the desire. So there are ways to just break that and get them free from that, you know.
Yeah.
But the truthfulness thing is really, you need to really think seriously about making sure that there's no hidden stuff. And and if you are preparing to get married, and if you are, you know, even before you're thinking about that, if you're dating someone, ask them that question. I've said to couples, look, you're potentially going to be spending the rest of your life with this person. Don't be scared to ask them the hard questions.
Yeah.
Say, do you have a problem with pornography?
Yeah.
Have you had a problem with smoking or dacha or drugs, or do you have a history of that? Do you have a, and watch how they respond to those things.
Mm.
Because, you know, someone said to you, but they could lie. I said, yes, they could lie, but remember that you're going to catch them out. So rather get it up front and deal with it up front, and then decide if you want to proceed, because it's rather that and then ending that relationship than finding out 10 years into the marriage and then, okay, what now?
Trust is broken.
Really, really broken down. And then emotional predictability. Emotional predictability is a big one, I think, because you don't know, every time your partner is walking through the door, you don't know what emotional state they're going to be in. So they are either angry or sad. And I was like it. You know, I'd come home and I'd be happy, and 5 minutes later I'd be upset about something.
Yeah.
And normally there was really silly little things, until the Lord convicted me and said to me, look, it's ungodly behavior the way that you behave. You're like 40-something, when I was 40. You know, you're 40-something years old and you're acting like a little toddler, you know, playing your toy for silly little thing. And so that really breaks down trust. Now, man, Andy was quite strong with that, and she said, look, if you're going to behave like that, you need to, you know, take responsibility, because that's yours, you know, don't allow it to impact. And often what we do is we think we're too scared to challenge the other person, because we think as Christians we should just help them and encourage. And for me, I think that's that toxic behavior. Mm-hmm. And it's if you are just allowing that to happen and not confronting it and saying to you, look, you need to get help. I'm not going to tolerate this behavior. You need to sort it out. You need to take responsibility. That's enabling that behavior. And I don't think it's healthy.
And obviously, Steve, you're not talking about us. You recognize the fact that there is a spectrum of emotions that we can experience and express.
Sure.
But you don't want that to be this massive roller coaster constantly. So it's a level of predictability.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that they're going to be the same emotion all the time constantly,
but
that you're not walking in the door thinking, I don't know, this could be hurricane storms,
that's it,
it could be they're asleep and passed out, because it's so volatile.
And you see, the difficult for me has been is that Mandy is like that. She's very predictable.
Yeah.
She's always in a good mood. She's like not never in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Even when she's had a hard day, she doesn't have that volatility, whereas I was the complete opposite.
Yeah.
And I still am to some degree, because my emotions, you know, I'm all over the place, but much more predictable. Yeah.
And
than
you've,
they
got, you've obviously worked on that and paid
very
attention
much,
to that.
Very much so, because I was that, what you said, you know, that, that up and down all the time. Within within a space of minutes, I'd be up and down, up and down, up and down, and lose my cool and like shout, and things would just be chaos, and then it would just come down and everything, and that's so unhealthy. So it's right to clarify that it's just that enormous emotional, but not the thing like I've had a bad day, I'm tired. But I can use indigo. I often say to couples, look, if you have had a bad day and it has been something that's been a bit of a struggle, then just get into a pattern of sending an emoji. Like, you know, bad day, thumbs down. So if I send Manny a thumbs down, she knows that I've had a bad day. So she can prepare herself. She can prepare the kids. Let's just to and it's not to try and like, okay, you know, make sure everything's okay and walk on eggshells around the place. It's just, okay, fine. Dad's had a bad day. Let's see. And then when I come in, I still try and respond, because I have to take responsibility for my emotional state. I can't make someone else responsible for that. I'm responsible. So even though I've had a bad day, I can learn techniques of becoming mindful, of being in touch with my emotions and my feeling, so that I can predict how I'm going to respond to certain things. And when those things come up, I'm emotionally intelligent. Even though it's upsetting me, I can still be calm. I can still be gentle. I can still be respectful. So it's all that, just adjusting and learning. And then big thing for me, you have to take responsibility for that yourself. That's your stuff. It's not Mandy's. Mandy's not like that. So I can't say it's her fault. It's me. I took responsibility for that. I changed that, and it became much easier to do that. Then the final one's discretion. Discretion for me is also a big one. Discretion is that you don't talk about stuff outside of your marriage. So what's happening in your marriage, you don't run, you know, anytime your partner upsets you or something, you run into mommy or daddy or friends or cousins, uncles, aunties, telling them how bad it is. You need to deal with that and learn to deal with that. And if you're unable to do that, you need to get help. You need to go to a counselor together, and then see a counselor together. And then sometimes what I do is I separate them and I'll see them individually and then just talk about issues there. Because sometimes the issues that you're facing in your marriage are issues, unresolved issues from your past that you are bringing into your marriage, and it's influencing the way that your marriage is going down. Because you've been betrayed and hurt by male figures in your past, and you are projecting it onto your husband, and that's unfair. And it's the same either way. You know, you've had bad female experiences, now you're projecting it onto your wife. And that's the one part of discretion. The other part of discretion is that you never ever use anything that your partner shared with you in a vulnerable state against them in an argument. So for instance, I say to man, you know, when I was 8 years old, I was sexually abused. And then later on in our marriage, we might have sexual difficulties. And then she says, oh, it's because you were sexually abused. That's why we're having this problem. It's your fault. That's a lack of discretion, and it's hurtful and painful. If she said, you know, do you think there's a possibility that there's a correlation between where we are now and that? That's a different thing. But, you know, in that state of vulnerability, I'm using that in an argument, it's not good. So those are the seven forms of trust, kind of thing.
And Steve, you know, obviously we want to do everything we can to maintain and build trust. But if trust is broken, it's not to say that that's the end.
Yes,
obviously we can rebuild trust, but as a first priority, it's just recognizing all of those areas of trust and doing everything in our power to maintain that trust and build
Look,
that trust.
I think we can definitely build trust back, but it's going to be difficult. So then rather be preventative, not curative. So if I'm building in preventative, I'm intentional. Being intentional means I'm putting preventative measures into my marriage to prevent that lack of trust from being a problem down the line.
Well, Steve, once again, the time has flown by, but such important and valuable content. And I think, you know, we started out by saying this is for couples that are in maybe healthy marriages but want to make those marriages stronger. But I think we've hit on some things that there may be couples that are already battling, and some keys that they can begin to implement that can actually turn their marriages around, that turn it not just from good to great and to stronger, but even from a struggling marriage to a marriage that can thrive just by building in particularly these aspects of communication and connection, which is what you've been primarily speaking about. Steve, thank you for being with us at Focus and for just sharing your heart and helping married couples.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been great.
Well, this has been so good. Again, practical tools to implement within your marriage to make it stronger. But I do want to say to you, If your marriage is in a difficult place, maybe trust has been broken and you're struggling to rebuild that trust and enjoy the connection that should be there in your marriage, I want you to know that we're here for you. We have a great team of counselors and we have a range of ways that you can connect. It may be through a prayer request or having someone pray with you over the phone. Maybe it's setting up an online counseling session. Whatever suits you, we're here for you. You can give us a call on 031-716-3300 or connect with our counseling team through the counseling page on our website at safamily.co.za. When you're on the website, you'll also see Dr. Steve's book, Radical Marriage, and I encourage you to get a copy of that. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you back next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.